What does it mean to be justified by faith? This is Carl Kosar from Walwal University School of Theology. Welcome to Good Word, our weekly radio program that explores biblical and theological topics that are central to our Christian faith. Today we continue our study in Paul's letter to the Romans by looking at one of the most significant portions of a chapter in Romans, Romans chapter 3, verse 21 down through verse 31. And to help us explore this important passage, I've invited two of my colleagues to join me again, Dr. Bruce Johansson, Dr. Strako Stefanovic, both professors here at Walla Walla University in our School of Theology. Gentlemen, welcome and thank you for joining me once again.
Thanks, good to be here.
Now, of all the passages in Romans, I think no single passage is packed with more theologically significant terms than this little section, these 10 verses here in Romans chapter 3. We get words redemption, justification, propitiation, grace, justification by faith, and the list goes on and on. In fact, I saw that one scholar, Leon Morris, actually said this about it. He said, this passage, and here I quote, is possibly the most important single paragraph ever written.
Wow.
Now, I don't know about that, but I do know that these are significant terms that we use in churches today, and this is sometimes just spiritual jargon for us. So we have a chance here to define what these terms mean and hopefully make them a little clearer to our listeners. But Paul starts off in a rather interesting way. He says, but now the righteousness of God. So here we come back to God's righteousness. It has been manifest apart from the law and the prophets. Here we have law and the prophets again. Perhaps Dr. Stefanovic wants to give us some insight. What is our Jewish rabbi doing here back with the law and the prophets?
This expression probably is a summary of the God's revelation called Old Testament, which points to the fact that God, for example, delivered the Israelites before giving them the Ten Commandments. Mm-hmm. So very often in the Old Testament, we have God taking an initiative. In fact, to describe biblical religion, it would be fair to say that it's biblical religion is not humans in search of God, but God looking for humans to save them, to find them, and to bring them to himself.
Starts right in the Garden of Eden, doesn't
Correct.
It?
Correct. Yes.
And here once again we see, once again, God's righteousness being offered as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked a few weeks ago about how Martin Luther disliked that one verse in Romans chapter 1 about the righteousness of God. He actually said that one of his favorite verses here in Romans was actually Romans chapter 3, verse 21, and two words, but now. You think of all the words in Romans chapter 3, why would those be the most important ones for Luther? Well, it's because he thought they were perhaps the most practical in his daily spiritual walk, because he said in Romans chapter 3, verse 20 ends with every mouth silent. We can say nothing in response. God's law has showed us that we're sinners. There's no hope for us. And then he inserts these words, but now. In fact, that word now in Greek is emphatic. And Luther would say that when the devil would come to him and say, you're worthless, you're hopeless, you're a sinner, he would say, you're right, I agree, but now God's righteousness is the answer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, we have a famous verse here, Romans 3:23, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Why would he bring this back right here, Bruce? Any insight?
Yeah, it's a recap of the point that he has made.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the language there, he all have sinned. It's an aorist, but I think it's perfective.
What does that mean?
That means that everybody has fallen into sin, and then the consequences continue. And actually, that is brought out by the next word. You could translate fall short as keep on falling short.
Mm.
It's a present. So it's continuous action.
So whether it's sin past tense or sin present tense, it's grabbed us.
We are in it. That's our condition.
Yet God has provided a solution for us.
Yes.
He says here that we have been justified by his grace. We hear this word justified. We sing about it at church.
Yeah.
What is justification?
It's God's way of looking at us in the first place. And we find a number of examples in the Bible where God considers somebody righteous, not necessarily because that person has never sinned, but because that person has a repentant heart and is always willing to return to God, regardless of what he has done and so on. Because the heroes of the Bible are not the people who never sinned, but those who were able to see what their problem was
and repent,
come back to God.
Yeah. Justification, I think, in the minds of you know, dikaiosune,
mm-hmm.
in
the Greek word for it.
The Greek word for it. Would we call a forensic background?
What do you mean forensic?
Forensic has to do with the courthouse, mm-hmm. and you're guilty, and you're in front of the judge, and you are pronounced not guilty. But actually, you still are guilty.
Mm.
That nuance that comes from the Christian background, okay? That you are made right with God. You are pronounced. You are justified, okay? It's not that, you know, God finds good excuses for your sins, but rather he has paid the penalty for you. And that's where the other term comes in, redemption. There's this paying of the penalty that would be due to you. That word also brings in a slave market background. So there would be these associations. And I'd like to just say here, a lot of people get into huge arguments about substitution and you're taking off with that. These are all rich pictures that do not empty the mystery of grace.
So all different metaphors for understanding how God has acted in Jesus.
They help
Christ.
Us to see it. It's a diamond. It's got many facets to it, and they all shine.
Hmm.
But ultimately, the atonement for me is the mystery of God's love, which meets the mystery of sin.
Hmm.
And we talk about it in human language.
Yeah. We all of it which falls short of understanding
fullness
of who God is. It's like a diamond you turn and you see all the different sides of it, and they glitter.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I like justification too, because the opposite of justification is condemnation.
Condemnation.
And I think when we see that, you said this courtroom sitting, that God is the judge who pronounces us righteous, which to me means that justification is more than God saying, you're innocent.
Yeah.
It's God saying, no, you're righteous.
Yeah.
So it is that gift,
again,
of his righteousness.
Yes.
Now, can you tell me, you mentioned that justification here leads to this redemption. You said the slave world. How is redemption a slave term?
Paying the price, you have many different things. A slave could buy his own freedom. He could redeem himself. I think there's some interesting Old Testament backgrounds, too. But somebody else could redeem the slave, too. And, you know,
so redemption then was not, I mean, today, you know, redeemed, how I love to proclaim it. We sing it. But I don't think in our modern vocabulary, redemption, redeeming is a common term. So we're saying that when Paul uses this word was not really a church term. It was a pagan term that he grabs hold of.
From slavery to freedom.
A visual description of what God does for us.
In the Old Testament, God is the redeemer, right?
And
different persons act as redeemers.
Mm-hmm. Goel, famous Goel.
Yes.
So from what are we redeemed then? What does God redeem us from?
That big problem of for all have sinned and keep falling short.
There's four verses I like in the New Testament. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 14, Paul talks that we've been redeemed from the devil.
Yes.
Or the author of Hebrews. And then also 1 Corinthians 15, redeemed from death.
Mm-hmm.
And of course here in Romans 6, 22 and Romans 3, 24, I think redeemed from the power of sin. So once again, there's just so many facets. I mean, the gospel is bigger than any one person can handle, I think.
Yeah.
But I think those are the two easy ones. General, I need your help with one that my students often find very troubling. And they usually find that troubling because they can't pronounce it. Verse 25. Whom God, speaking of Jesus Christ, put forward as a propitiation by his blood.
Hmm.
What is a propitiation?
An appeasement?
An appeasement? Tell us more.
It's a term which, if you're not careful to define it in a Christian context, it in the pagan world, it was used to do something to buy off the gods.
Mm.
The gods were either not interested in you, or they were angry with you, or you had done, you know, broken taboos, and you needed some kind of safety. So you provided sacrifices, or you did different things that would show, you know, that you were sorry and that you needed this God to be nice to you. So basically, you were appeasing the God. The God wasn't favorable towards you.
So we've seen Paul reach out to the legal world. We've seen Paul reach out to the slave market. So is Paul here?
This is the cultic world.
Is Paul associating what Jesus has done for us with pagan idol worship and pagan sacrifices? I mean, is it?
Mm.
Did You know, sometimes we get this picture of God being wrathful, but Jesus being the one who loves us, and he pleads, and God says, well, okay, I guess because I love you, I'll do this. Is that the right picture here?
It is God who provides the appeasement, not we. That's the difference. That is such an absolutely profound, fundamental difference. Salvation starts on God's side. It's what you said about the Old Testament. He always saves his people, then he asks them to, he presents his requirements.
So here he takes a pagan concept. We could say maybe he baptizes it, perhaps. He changes it, because it is, I think it is true that in this sense that we don't offer any gift because God has provided the gift for us.
Yes.
He's not a fickle God.
No.
So once again, perhaps using terminology that, but also reinventing it at the same time.
I believe that the same expression is also rooted in the Old Testament because of the term kafar that is related to hilasterion. Okay. And that is when the blood, which symbolizes life of the sacrificial animal, is applied so that the sinner is forgiven. And again, someone could say, but the sinner brought his own sacrificial animal. True, and yet who gave life to that animal?
Yes.
So God, because the blood is shed, it's still something that costs God.
Yes. And who gave the instructions to do that?
Yeah.
That also comes from God.
Yeah. This goes back to the God who goes searching for us.
Yes, exactly.
Powerful concepts.
Yeah.
Well, Paul goes on. He has one last expression I'd like for us to look at just briefly here. He said that God did this so that he could be both just in verse 26 and the justifier of one who has faith in Jesus.
Yes.
How is God both just and the justifier? I mean, it seems like those are almost opposite terms.
You have theodicy here. God's love proclaims that he is just. He could be accused of being arbitrary, etc. But no, he goes more than the second mile.
So in one sense, I guess we could say that God himself is, it's kind of beholden to himself, because to be a just God, he has to condemn sin.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But to be a loving God, he wants to also forgive the sinner.
Right.
So how can you keep these two together?
Yeah.
And I think here the answer is that in what Jesus has done, God is both just because sin has been dealt with in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And because of that,
he is
just and the justifier of the one who has faith. Powerful concepts. We look here at what God has done for us. I think Romans 3, verse 21 through 31 tells us a beautiful picture about who God is, a loving God who provides for us, who his Son is, Jesus Christ, who gave himself for us, and also about ourselves. Sin has warped us, but God has provided a solution for us. Gentlemen, this has been a rich discussion. Looking forward to continuing this next week. So I'd like to thank Dr. Johansson and Zdravko Stefanovic for joining me today, and also Rebecca Hannon for her technical assistance. Please join us next week as we continue to explore these fascinating concepts in Paul's letter to the Romans. It's been a blessing for us, and I hope it's a blessing for you, our listeners. For Good Word, I'm Carl Gossard.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.